Tanya, I will turn it over to you. Can't wait to hear your story.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You know, we're so lucky for technology these days. You know, yesterday I'm like, I could have sworn it was going to be Halloween, because I remember thinking, oh, Halloween, that's, you just never know. And with 2020, are we even going to be doing anything? Are we going to be stuck in our houses on Halloween? So, you know, I rarely ever say no when asked to share my story or steps or traditions or whatever. I rarely say no. And I figured, you know, 2020 has been crazy enough. Let's just, you know, say yes again. So thank you so much for asking me to be here tonight. I'm also grateful to technology, because I'm like, I can't remember what the girl's name was. It was either Lisa or Jamie. And I'm going through all these people I've met on Zoom in the last 7 months, but I found it thanks to the search in your text. So either way, thank you so much for asking me to be here tonight. I am a very grateful recovered Al-Anon. And like she said, my name is Tanya Dickey. I am a part of Al-Anon, simply put, because I have an alcoholic husband. And by the grace of God, he does have some sobriety in his life. And, you know, 8 years ago, I can't believe it has been 8 years since I stepped foot into an Al-Anon room. I was actually just looking at my book. I got, my husband had a special book made for me. It's the big book. And he had it leather bound, and it's got the first time I ever set foot in an Al-Anon room. It's got the date on there, and it was November the 8th, 2012. And, you know, if you would have asked me 8 years ago where I would be today, I would have laughed at you if you would have said that I had a sober husband. I would have laughed at you if you would have told me, oh, you'll still be married, your kid will be okay. My life was spiraling out of control, and I had a 5-month-old baby at home when I first walked into Al-Anon. But let me back up a little bit, because I say that I just have the one qualifier to get me into Al-Anon. And while that is kind of true, my Al-Anonism, which I'm glad that was in your addendum to the addendum of your welcoming, your opening, because I absolutely am an Al-Anon through and through from the time I was like knee high to a grasshopper. So we're going to start back, you know, give you a brief background of who I am, where I come from, but I was born and raised in Texas, and I got a mom, I got a dad, and I got an older brother. My parents are still married. They've been married for 51 years, I think. Yep, we celebrated 50 last year. And neither one of them are alcoholics. However, my dad's dad, my grandfather, was an alcoholic, among others in my dad's family. And my dad, I mean, if you ask me, if I'm qualifying somebody, that fool is an Al-Anon through and through. So I come by it naturally. The apple did not fall far from the tree on this one. So I grew up with, my parents didn't really drink. I've never seen my dad drunk. I've definitely seen my mom drunk. She and I, you know, I mean, she and I have had our fun together, but not when I was a child. I grew up in a pretty straight-laced house, but not a religious house. But my dad, from a very young age, would tell my brother and I and warn my brother and I of the dangers of alcoholism. It runs in your family. You drink, you're going to be an alcoholic. That's what I thought alcoholism was. I thought it was, if I drank, that meant that because I have this genetic thing that he keeps talking about, that means that I would be an alcoholic. Turns out that wasn't true, because I definitely drink. I definitely have had, you know, my fair share of partying, I guess if you want to call it that, over the years. But I am not an alcoholic at all. I'm simply, I don't have that allergy. But either way, growing up, I was a very precocious little child. I was always wanted to be in charge. I had an older brother, but I was definitely the older sister of the two of us. We were only 23 months apart, but I was always trying to keep up with him. And if I wasn't keeping up, I was one step ahead of him. And that's just the way it was. And he was okay with it, you know? I, you know, was always the responsible one. I wanted to be the leader of the class. I wanted to be, my mom always tells this story of when I was in kindergarten. She had her first little parent-teacher conference. And I mean, I loved school. Loved it. I mean, I was the first kid raising their hand. You know, who needs a helper? I'm there. You need somebody to write names on the wall? I got you, teacher, you know. And my mom says that my kindergarten teacher, you know, they have their first little parent-teacher conference. And, you know, little Tanya, she's doing so great in school. She loves it. She's so smart, you know, blah, blah, blah. Can always count on her. But there's just one problem. My mom's like, oh, problem? What? You know, I need to let her let me teach the class. And I never knew that for years. And my mom, I think my mom told that story at like my wedding shower or something. And I was like, oh, that's funny. That's cute. I totally believe it. But either way, so that's just kind of, that's just who I was growing up. And, you know, I wanted to be, I always was very, I'm not a perfectionist, nothing like that, but I definitely strived to make people happy. I strived to get straight A's because, hey, that makes the teachers happy. That makes my parents happy. You know, I always did what I should do. You know, I was just that kid. My nickname in the family growing up was Tanya Two Shoes because I was a goody goody two shoes. And, you know, they still call me that to this day. And it's fine. You know, I know it's all in good fun. But either way, moving forward, as I got older, that leadership and that striving to be, you know, the helper and the person that you could count on turned into an adult and with those same qualities and quirks about me, and started dating, you know, teenager, whatever. And I never knew this. I never caught myself in this pattern until I came into Al-Anon. But every serious boyfriend that I had, not dated whatever here and there, but like if it became like a serious thing where we were actually in a relationship, not just a date to a movie, he needed my help in some way, shape, or form. And for the most part, that help came in the form of, or what I saw as them needing my help was in the form of drugs or alcohol use. And I was goody two shoes, like I said. So that was kind of weird that I would like gravitate towards the drugs and alcohol, but you know, I guess I found people that I needed to help, and that's where I fit in. Getting into my kind of young adulthood life, I had a very serious boyfriend who, I shouldn't say very serious, because I mean, I was really, it was not serious enough for like marriage or anything, but to a 18, 19 year old, it was very serious. And, I was the kid who was going to go to college. That was my track, you know, because I did what other people, what I should do, right? In quotes. I expected that of the people that I dated. And so he didn't fall into that, which was such a, you know, I was already looking for that Jekyll and Hyde, I guess, because while I knew that this person had a lot of drug and alcohol issues, I still expected them to follow the path that I thought that they should lead, you know, which in turn turned me into a kind of a crazy person, where I obsessed about this person. I would, you know, get done with my classes and drive straight to him, you know, or I'd be calling 14 times a day. Why aren't you answering the phone? finally, after, you know, a couple of years of trying to change this person and help this person, he would not fall in line. And so, bye. You're not going to follow what I tell you to do. I'm going to eventually get rid of you. And so I did. And a couple of series of failures and whatnot. I'm off at college, enjoying life, trying to figure out life on my own. And I can't really get rid of this one. You know, like, he just keep coming back and I just keep falling for it. And finally, I don't know what it was, but finally I was done. And I actually, probably the first and only time in my life, said, if I walk out of here, I'm never coming back. And I finally did it. I never came back. And I was done with that. And I can remember going to my roommate. I was like 21 maybe. And I remember going to my roommate and I said, girl, the next guy, like, for real, serious relationship. I mean, first of all, I'm done with serious relationships. But second of all, he is not going to have a drug or alcohol problem. I can't deal with this crazy. Like, that's just too much for me. I need a nice, quiet guy, gonna get a degree, gonna be a studious little businessman. I laugh because I'm sure y'all know that that's probably not how my story goes. Fast forward, and I meet my future husband. And we did actually meet in college right at the very end. And we started kind of, you know, flirting, dating, whatnot. And I was still very burned by this guy from a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, whatever. So I still wasn't into a serious relationship. Well, this guy, he didn't have a drug or alcohol problem, or so I could see. Did he like to party? Sure he did, but just like I did, you know, and it just was different, like, or at least so I thought. And so anyways, you know, we started dating eventually pretty seriously. And, you know, I still was very much on my path of, I have a plan for my life. And you either jump on board this train or you're going to get left behind, kind of a thing. Well, his path kind of went with mine. And so, you know, eventually we were in a very serious relationship, and eventually we'd get married. Right. But all that being said, you know, I had a plan for my life. I was going to do this. I was going to have a degree. I was going to get this job, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's just kind of how I rolled in life. You know, I always kind of had an expectation for myself. I would set it and I would meet it. Or I would try very hard to do it. And, you know, God puts people in our lives, I think, to humble us sometimes. And you might not realize it in the beginning, that person's going to humble you to your core. And that's what happened to me. So my husband and I get married, and, you know, all was fine. We had a very good relationship. We were good friends. Our friends got along. We were not an arguing type couple. But when I first met my husband, I'm going to call him Jared. I have his permission to use his name. He is a very grateful member of AA. So I'll just put that out there, so we all know we're kind of a great person we're dealing with or whatnot. When I first met him, I should have mentioned this. We had been dating for maybe, I don't know, maybe 6-8 months, a year, and I was going to meet his family for the first time. Actually, I'd already met them maybe like in a restaurant, but, you know, we were off at school. We didn't live at home. He lived his home was 5 hours away. So anyway, I was going to go in on a family vacation with him that summer. And he said, you know, you should know something about my dad. I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, my dad, you know, he's a bit of a drinker. You know, some people might call him an alcoholic, but, you know, he's not, you know. But just so you know, he's a drinker. And I'm like, okay, you know, so I meet this guy. He's a nice guy, charming. I mean, great, great father-in-law, you know, wasn't a father-in-law at the time, brother or boyfriend's dad, you know, but he was a great guy and still is to this day. But there is a but in there, and he absolutely did have an alcohol problem. But I saw it. All I saw was a guy who was a fun, charming guy, got goofy in the evenings, and drank till he passed out in his recliner. I mean, but I didn't see anything else. So again, you know, I've only heard about alcoholism. I've never actually seen what goes on behind closed doors, right? So then as I got to know him and got to know his family, I would see some, you know, some things about his dad and his drinking that, you know, was like, that little bit of a red flag, but you know, he's 5 hours away from me, doesn't harm my life. And when I see him, we have fun together. So, but my husband at the time, or my boyfriend at the time, told me at one point, is telling me some story, and you know, a war story of his dad being drunk when he was a kid. And he says, you know, Tanya, I will, you know why I don't really drink a whole bunch? I don't know why. Because of my dad. I will never drink like my dad. I'll never be like my dad. And actually, if you ever see me drinking like my dad, you have my permission to stop me. Well, you guys, that is the worst thing you could have said to me, because that was 20 years ago and I still remember it to this day. I'm an Al-Anon. So, fast forward a couple more years. We've been married a few years, and we're a happy-go-lucky couple. We party. We like to do, you know, a little smoking, a little drinking, but nothing crazy. You know, no hard drugs by any means. No teetotaling, driving, you know, like nothing big, just good old-fashioned. You're in your 20s. You've got a little bit of money because now you're working a little bit. You've got some sort of a career going, and we're just having fun. No kids. None of our friends had kids. We were all just kind of living life. Well, then we decide, we're 30. We want to have kids. So we intentionally and absolutely want to have a family, and we get pregnant. And when I get pregnant, you know, obviously I can't be partying Tanya anymore. Now it's time to be, you know, home buddy Tanya, mom Tanya. And once again, expectations. You know, I have this expectation of how I'm going to be as a mom and how he's going to be as a dad. And when I got pregnant, I couldn't have any of those, you know, non-meeting approved fun parties. And I asked him, you know, hey, since I can't smoke or drink, how about you not smoke or drink? And he's like, yeah, that's fair enough. Sounds good. Well, I was able to stop drinking and smoking that day. Day that two lines popped up was the day that went away for me. My husband was unable to do that. And, you know, alcoholism is a disease. And it is a disease that is three things that we know for sure. It is chronic, it is progressive, and it is fatal. And in my husband's case, he was self-medicating for years with marijuana. And I was okay with it because I was enjoying it too. But when we tried to stop smoking and drinking, the smoking went away. And now there was no more self-medicating. And the drinking, he was unable to stop drinking. And it is progressive. And in my husband's case, it was like a switch flipped. You know, for some people, that allergy that they talk about is there from the time they're 15 years old, and is activated from the time they're 15 years old. And I believe, and my husband will say that he believes his was activated when the day he started drinking, you know, or try to drink. However, he was able to pseudo control it with other things, right? Mainly in his case, marijuana. But either way, he was unable to stop drinking. And as my pregnancy progressed, so did his drinking. and it was quick for him. Then I had the baby and I was mother bear mode and I was not okay with drinking. And you know, the book says that, I'm so glad that I can use the big book because that's the only way that I know this. But the book does tell us that, I get distracted and my mind goes crazy, but we're talking about the fact that my husband has this allergy to alcohol. And when he tried to stop drinking, he was unable to. And so he started to hide it because Mama Bear over here was not okay with it. And oh, that's what I was gonna say. I gotta find the page. But it says that, page 19 of the big book, it says, "We have concluded to publish an anonymous volume setting forth the problem as we see it. We shall bring to the task our combined experience and knowledge. This should suggest a useful program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem." I am anyone concerned with a drinking problem. So I know that this program was meant for me. I just didn't find the big book for a little while. So anyways, by the time my baby was about 3 months old, I had to go back to work. And the plan was that he was going to be a stay-at-home dad because he was self-employed. And he's going to stay home with the baby. Well, that terrified the living daylights out of me because at this point, his disease has progressed rapidly to the point where, I mean, I'm not going to tell war stories because that's not the point here. But he could drink for weeks on end without any sort of food or alcohol, but that wasn't right in the very beginning. That was over the course of about 3 years. And I quickly, at that 3 month mark, when I had to go back to work, my obsession grew astronomically because I was in fear at all times, afraid of what he was gonna do with the baby. Even though he was a good dad, he was drunk at all times, basically. I couldn't trust that I could come home at 5 o'clock and he would be not drinking. Now, in the beginning, you know, that those first few months, could he wait until 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Sure, he could white knuckle it, and he did, and he tried. But man, the explosion that would happen from me when I would get home, because he could only wait till 3 or 4, he couldn't get to the 5 o'clock when I would get home, and all of this, like, you know, I craved control. I craved being in charge. And all of a sudden, I couldn't control what was going on in my house. And it made me absolutely insane to the point that I was checking my phone 50, 60, 70 times a day. Like, I couldn't even tell you. I don't think it's even a number that you could count because it was constant looking and seeing where his little location dot was. Is he driving with the baby to Walmart to get more alcohol? I mean, pure obsession. And about 2 months into work, I was not paying attention at work. I was literally obsessed over what was happening at home. And my boss calls me in and she's like, "Tanya, I need to talk to you." I'm like, I mean, I've been trying to, you know, like, I've been trying to cover it up, not let people know what's going on. But I've already reached out a couple times to my parents, you know, my best friend, he's drinking and I don't know what to do. But she calls me in and I'm like, I'm about to lose my job. I'm the breadwinner at this point because now he really can't work. He's really just staying at home. And she pulls me aside and I'm like, "Yeah, what's going on?" And she's like, "Ever since you came back from maternity leave, I don't know what's going on with you, but something's weird. You're not on it the way you usually are. And you know, once again, I'm in control. And so when I'm at work, that's how I am too. You know, I'm a very loyal worker and I could be counted on because I did what I was expected to do." And I had never broken down to tell anybody what was happening in my house. And for some reason, I broke down that day and I started crying, which I never did. And my boss also was a very stoic woman who I looked up to, who, you know, to me, she had it all. right? And I broke down and I started saying, I don't know what's going on at home. I think my husband has a drinking problem, and I'm just, tears are pouring down my face. And she starts to cry, and I'm like, oh shoot. No. She can't cry. You know, I'm breaking down, and I don't do that. And she says, Tanya, I know exactly what you're going through. I'm like, what? She said, she proceeds to tell me her own story of her son. And I'm not going to go into her story because that's something totally different. But either way, she said, have you ever heard of Al-Anon? Well, I mean, I've heard of it, but I don't have time for that. I've got a 5-month-old baby at home, and I've got a drunk husband at home. I don't have time for that. Tanya, go to Al-Anon, find a meeting. And I'm like, oh my God. I literally, like maybe a week ago, looked up, what is Al-Anon, you know? And maybe I probably left, you know, the website open on the computer for him to see, but that's neither here nor there, you know? But God was working on me, and he was trying to get me to listen, you know? My best friend had mentioned Al-Anon, and I think that's actually how I started Googling it. And she said, find a meeting, you know? I'm like, okay, she's told me this. Best friends told me this. I looked it up, and I was like, check. There was like some checklist or something. Check, check, check. I freaking checked all the damn boxes. And I'm like, oh, I don't have time to go to, I don't know, you know. Well, I went. Grabbed my little baby up, 5 months old, 6 months old, and off I, well, 5 months, November 8th. Yep. She was born in May. And off I went and went through the doors and truly thought I was coming into Al-Anon to find, I knew it was a 12-step program. I'd heard of that. And so I figured it was the 12 steps to get my husband sober, truly. I did not know that I was going to find out that I had an issue. I really, truly, truly believed that his issue, it was his issue. And that if he could just stop drinking, our lives would go back to being normal. And that is not what I found. And I'm so grateful that that's not what I found, because, I mean, I'll get to it, but my life is totally different now because of Al-Anon, and not just with my husband, you know, with every relationship in my life. So anyways, I go to Al-Anon, and, you know, first step is we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. Okay, well, check, check, check. Yep. Powerless. My life's unmanageable. But admit, okay, take back that check mark. I'm not going to admit that just yet. It took me a long time to just get to that powerlessness point, that I could truly believe that I had no power in it, and that there was a higher power out there that did have a hand in it. And it took me I came into Al-Anon. Everybody kept saying, get a sponsor. I don't know what the sponsor thing is, but all right. So I go for maybe 5-6 months. They tell me, you know, Tanya, come in and go to 6 meetings as close as possible before you decide Al-Anon's not for you. Okay, that's what people say. I follow the rules. That's what I'm gonna do. So I go to 4 meetings in a row, and I was probably the youngest person in the room by about 30 years. I didn't see anything that I had in common with the ladies in there, except that they were very, very kind, and they remembered my name after day one. But I felt the love. And unfortunately, those first 4 meetings, I left pissed off, angry, because now I'm hearing, he's got no control over it. What the heck? He better get control of this. Otherwise, why am I here? You know? But they said 6 meetings. So off I go to the 5th one. I'm not really thrilled about it, but I go. And I don't know what it was that night. Someone was telling their story. I do know what it was. It was God trying to get me to listen to him. But I was a stubborn person, and I went to be in charge, and I went about to give it up to him. So, but there was something that she said that night that had me come back. That fifth night, I didn't leave angry. I left feeling hope. Like maybe this was something that I could figure out. But I just didn't know what I was in for. And so I kept going. And unfortunately, it turned into a kind of tit for tat because I was going because I should. I wasn't going for myself. And over the course of the next 18 months, his alcoholism got 2 years, actually. His alcoholism got a whole lot worse. And our family life got a whole lot worse. And I got a whole lot worse. And my obsession grew. The steps that I was willing to go to try to control his drinking. I mean, I could tell y'all some crazy stories, but you know, we'll just leave it at stealing car keys so he wouldn't drive, stealing his wallet so he couldn't go buy alcohol. Well, guess what, you guys? They can still walk and they can still steal, you know? There's ways an alcoholic will find his alcohol or her alcohol. And it drove me nuts. I'm like, I'm doing all of these things and you're still drinking. Like, what else can I control? You know, it, to the point where I was manipulating him. He would hide his wallet from me so that I wouldn't steal it. I'd find it. I'd hide it from him so that, but then I would say, I didn't take it. You probably are just drunk and you just hid it from yourself, doofus, you know? He was manipulating me. I was manipulating him. We were in a world of hurt, circle, 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 just constant spinning of us. And yet I was still going to Al-Anon. I was going in and listening. I even tried to get a sponsor. I even tried to go through step one and two and three. And I wasn't willing and I was not ready. I was not ready to give up power that it talks about in step one. But thank God that I kept going, you know, and eventually, you know, I would be like, oh, I'm only going to Al-Anon if you go to AA. Well, really, I was only going so that I could make sure that he was at AA. And then I'd be in the other room. I mean, just pure insanity, right? So then I somehow find this big book group. Oh, I should mention that there was nothing wrong with the group that I was going to, but in my story, I ended up finding a big book group. And I had only ever really gone to discussion groups. I'd never really studied literature. I knew there was literature. I have all the books, but I didn't know I was supposed to study them and like learn from them. And I started going to this new group, and they kept talking about working the steps, getting a sponsor, doing it quickly, and doing it for yourself, not coming to Al-Anon for anybody else. And I'm like, well, that's a novel concept. And you know, I guarantee I'd heard that before, but I wasn't ready to hear it. And so I've been going, and I'm like, okay, there's this girl there at this big book group that she's like me. She's got an alcoholic husband. She checks all the boxes. I'm going tonight and I'm going to ask her to be my sponsor. I'm ready to do this for myself. Well, God works in funny ways. And I get there and she's not there. Like my freaking plan. My plan is not happening. Well, that night was speaker night. And that speaker was not somebody that I'd ever met before, never seen her, never heard of her. And she wasn't like me. She didn't have an alcoholic husband. She had boys. I had a little girl at home, you know. But something she was saying, and she kept going back to this big book and kept saying, the program is laid out in this book. If you just follow these instructions, yeah, you're an Al-Anon, but this is for you. It just was hitting me like, boom, boom, boom. This is, oh my gosh, Tanya. The one thing I did different that day was I prayed before I went to that meeting. I didn't usually do that. Actually, I don't think I really ever did that. I prayed before that meeting and I asked God to guide me to that sponsor. I thought I was talking about that girl that I was waiting for to be at that meeting tonight, that night. God led me the other way, off my path and onto his path. And I'm so grateful that that happened, because that was the beginning for me, that was the day I was ready to admit that I was powerless over alcohol, truly, truly powerless, and ready to give that power to somebody else. And I did something I didn't usually do, which was stay after the meeting and actually talk to somebody, not just give them lip service. And I asked this lady, I really need a sponsor. Would you be willing to sponsor me? And she said, here's my phone number. You call me tomorrow and we'll talk. So I called her the next day, prayed before I called her, and called her. And she said, yeah, I'll sponsor you. But just know that I'm here to tell you some things you might not want to hear about yourself. And I'm like, I need that. I need someone who's going to call me on my crap, because I'm really good at manipulating people. I didn't know that yet. But I saw it as I'm really good at telling you what you want to hear. And she was like, that's not going to work. And I'm going to call you out. And fortunately she did. And I went through these steps quickly. For me, step 1, 2, and 3 was me getting to the point where I recognized that there were things about me that I could change that had nothing to do with his drinking. The book tells us, that this program is a program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem. And in the very beginning, the doctor's opinion, this book talks to me in so many different ways, and it says, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. This lady I was talking to had depth and weight. She knew what she was talking about. She came from addiction. She came from alcoholism. She didn't have an alcoholic husband, but she understood the experience that I was going through, the utter obsession, the utter unmanageability that I just wanted to shake the crap out of him and fix him. And shaking the crap out of him doesn't fix them. But I was the queen of frothy emotional appeal. I could cry with the best of them. I could yell with the best of them. I could cut you with a knife with my words, and she told me, Tanya, sometimes we're more deadly to our loved one than the alcohol is, because of our behavior. And that was shocking to me. And I was tired of myself. I was tired of being the way I was with my child. She was at 3 years old now, or no, she was 2 at this point. Yeah, 18. It was about 18 months that I'd been going. So yeah, she was about 2 at this point. And she was starting to pick up on my behaviors. She was starting to silent treatment her daddy. She was starting to, just turn around and walk away from him whenever he came in the room. She was absolutely following my behavior, and that was scary to me. I had to eat a whole bunch of humble pie working these steps, because quickly I got to the point, within probably just a couple of days of having this sponsor calling me out on my behavior, that I was harming my daughter, my mom, my dad, my brother, his mom, his dad. I was harming all of these people in the periphery of my life that I wasn't intentionally trying to harm, but it was all through my behavior. It was all because I was calling them and wrapping them up in all of this, when really I didn't need to be doing that. There was a different way out. And so I started working these steps very quickly. I had to get to that point. For me, steps 1, 2, and 3 was my body, spirit, and mind connecting. My body is my abnormal reaction to his drinking, which was texting thousands of times, constantly checking his little location dot, obsessing over him, leaving in the middle of the night, trying to find him. I abnormally reacted to him. And then I would emerge remorseful, like the book tells us the alcoholics do. I would emerge really remorseful the next day at the things I said or did, whether it was to him, whether it was to my own little baby. Not that I was harming her. There was no physical abuse or anything, but I wasn't there emotionally. You know, you can take care of a baby, but they need more, you know? And it wasn't intentional, you know, but I was harming my relationship with my mom. And anyways, I would feel really bad. And the next day, and I would get into this seeking, you know, something wasn't feeling right. Well, I know that that was my spirit, the spirit part of me, that restlessness, that irritable, that discontentedness. And I would, whenever I started getting like that, that RID that they talk about for the alcoholic, for me, it would lead to my insane thoughts. It would lead to me thinking, okay, but if I said it this way differently, then it'll be different, right? Yeah. You know, and I would convince myself, right? And so then my mind would take off and it would just go like, okay, yes, Tanya, you're right. If you do it this way, this time, things will be different. And then it would just lead me into that destructive behavior again. And I needed a spiritual solution to cut that off. You know, I needed some other power besides me to cut that off so that my body, my spirit, and my mind could connect in a way that was healing and that I didn't have control over. I don't know if that makes sense, but either way, the day I turned I made that decision and I said that third step prayer, my sponsor told me, okay, Tanya, today is the day that we start doing things differently. You're not going to do this A, B, C, D, and E, you know, you have a new way. And man, searching fearless moral inventory, God, that scared the crap out of me because, you know, I always did as I should, but beneath it, oh my God, I was not doing as I should. I was just like, it was just like this facade of me. And I was scared to find out what was going on underneath. But being able to make that fourth step inventory, I was able to be honest with myself for the very first time in my life. I was able to say, you are a selfish person. I'd always thought I was selfless. I gave and I gave and I gave. But the reason I gave, I come to find out, was because I expected something in return. And when you didn't do as I expected in return, I flipped a switch and I could be a horrible, mean person. And I didn't like that about myself. And getting to my fifth step, for me, was freeing. I was given so much hope in that 2-hour experience. Talks about a spiritual experience, and I felt it. I have had multiple spiritual experiences ever since then, but that one changed my life. Mainly because going through my fifth step, you know, part of it was I didn't get to use my resentments and my fears against other people to condone my behavior. I didn't get to use my past or somebody else's past against them. Because when I did that, that was me being in control. You know, if I'm truly allowing God to be in control in my life, that means he gets to take those resentments and those fears away from me so that I don't have these excuses any longer. You know, I am in charge of my actions and reactions. God gives me free will for a reason. But I'm in charge of those actions and reactions. And as I got through 6 and 7 and humbly asking him, well, being ready and willing to let God remove these defects that I found in myself, and asking him to remove them was also a part of me saying, I'm willing to no longer let that be my excuse in life. Poor me, poor martyr Tanya, victim Tanya, has this alcoholic husband. Y'all, my husband was still drinking at this time. But like I said, it's progressive and chronic, and he was progressing rapidly. And you know, I've told you it was fatal. He almost died twice. And I was right there, and I couldn't stop it. And But fortunately, I did have God on my side at that point. And, I'll tell this one quick war story, because I solely 100% know that it was God working in my life that night. My husband almost died the second time. He, at this point, was actually in this bed here. This is our guest room. And he stayed in here. He was very, very sick, man. And he literally only came out of his room to go smoke a cigarette. This was Daddy's room. This was Daddy's sick room, according to my 3-year-old at the time. She's now 3. And, Daddy's sick. He's no longer a drunk. He's no longer that drunk bastard. Daddy is sick. You know, I have started changing. I've changed how I respond to him. I'm now loving and tolerant and kind to him, even though it was scary. I still had fear. I still had real fear of him dying. But I had God on my side to take that fear from me and not allow me to act on that fear. Because if I acted on that fear, scary Tanya came back again. And I didn't want scary Tanya back again. She's not a good person. And so by this time, you know, I'm going through my step 9. I'm living in 10, 11, and 12. And my husband is still drinking. And so me working my steps didn't get him sober. Me forcing him to go to a number of treatment centers didn't get him sober. What got him sober was he found God himself. So anyways, back to the quick story of him working in my life. That night he was drunk, off, you know, just doing his thing. And it was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And at that point I was starting to sleep at night. I was actually like able to, you know, go to bed and wake up and check on him, maybe bring him a glass of water and go to work. And he just kind of did his thing. And my daughter and I did ours. And that night I woke up and I'm like, woke up with a start. So I'm laying there trying to go back to sleep, praying, because that's how I got back to sleep. And I heard something. I'm like, what was that? And I got, and I didn't ever, you know, I was at the point where I was no longer rescuing him. And so I laid there a little bit longer and I hear something else. I'm like, what is that? Let me just get up. So I go check on the baby. Well, she's 3, but you know, and she's fine. And I'm like, something is pulling me to go check on him. And I come in this room and he is lying on his back and he's vomiting and he is choking on his vomit and actively dying. If that's, how do you say that? Actively dying. But he was choking on his vomit. Not sure really how long it was lasting, but I immediately was like, holy crap, turned him over on his side, sputtered him out of it. You know, he came to, I mean, drunks, man, alcoholics, they can live through the craziest things. I if it was me, I'm sure I would have had to call an ambulance, but no, this fool, he just kind of sputtered himself awake, went and got water, had a cigarette, and he came back to bed, I guess. But either way, I'm sure that God woke me up that night, because otherwise, I just would not have checked on him. But anyways, moving forward, he eventually did find his own sobriety, and I had nothing to do with it. In fact, the weekend that he got sober, at this point, you know, like I said, my daughter and I, we were able to just kind of live our lives. And part of living our lives was he got left behind, you know, when we had family things to do, he didn't come to Thanksgiving, we went. Whereas before, I'd have stayed behind to take care of him. Christmas, we went, you know, so we had to go to Houston for my niece's birthday. And he was too drunk to come. And so I said, okay, I'm sorry. You're going to miss it. Love you. See you in 3-4 days when we get back. And, you know, 3 or 4 days when we got back, you know, I'd talk to him maybe a couple times while we were gone, but I wasn't obsessing about him while I was gone that weekend. And, you know, probably the second or third day he calls me, I'm sobering up. Okay, honey, you know, I've heard that before, but sure. Came home and he was sobering up and he hasn't had a drink since, by the grace of God, you know? And that's been a little over 5 years, September of 2015 for him. So anyways, since then, he has worked his own recovery, and I've worked mine, and we didn't do it together. We did it concurrently. I was already past my, you know, working my steps 1 through 9, but I'm still in 10, 11, and 12, and he's over here working 1, 2, 3, and 4. But I'm staying on my side of the street, you know, which I wasn't really good at doing maybe 12 months prior. And, you know, as time has gone on, my relationships with him, with my best friends, my parents, his family members, you know, I didn't even go into all that, but they were harmed significantly, and I had to make amends to every single one of them. And I was scared to do that. It was freaking, I've got to admit that I was wrong to these people. I was very wrong. And I was met with love and kindness. And I am so blessed by that. You know, I know that not everybody has that immense experience, but that, you know, for me was my experience. And, you know, to this day, we don't have a perfect life. You know, things get in the way. You know, we have an 8-year-old now. She's happy and healthy and thriving and very aware that her daddy's an alcoholic. She knows what AA is. She knows what Al-Anon is. She has definitely been to her fair share of these meetings. But you know, we are able to teach her spiritual principles without her even realizing it, you know, without even us realizing it, that we're kind and loving regardless of how other people act, that we can be kind to people, even if we don't agree with what they're doing or saying. You know, we can turn around and walk away, you know, and it's, you know, like I said, if 8 years ago, I would have laughed at you if you would have told me that we would be where we are today. And, you know, we've been given the opportunity to speak at separate times. Like I'm sharing today my story, and we've been given the opportunity to speak together. And man, what a blessing that is to be able to walk, you know, side by side, shoulder to shoulder, trudging the road of happy destiny with my Al-Anons and my alcoholic, and by the grace of Jesus, recovered alcoholic. But, you know, like I said, to this day, we still have issues, right? And it's not every day, you know, that is perfect, but when I get upset with my husband, you know, I can pause and I can admit that I was wrong for yelling at him about something dumb or even something not dumb, you know, but it's still not okay. You know, I still don't get an excuse for my behavior, but I have tools now to help me do it in a way that is kind and loving and truly kind and loving to myself, you know, much less to other people. You know, my husband and I have been trying to, you know, expand our family for quite a few years now. And we have had a lot of missteps, I guess, if you will. It's not gone the way we hoped. And, you know, old me, I'm not sure how I would have handled that. We've had a few miscarriages. We've tried some infertility stuff that hasn't worked. And, you know, that is all out of my control. And, you know, old me would have just, that would have been off my rocker, you know, but I've got God in my pocket now. And I ask him to guide that process. You know, we've even gone through the whole, like, should we even do this? Because are we messing with God's will? But, you know, God made science he made these scientists smart enough to figure out human biology, you know, but I do still recognize God has a hand in this. Whether it works or not, God made our family exactly the way he wanted it to be. Whether it's the three of us or whether it's, you know, the three of us plus another one in the future, we don't know, right? But I can at least go to bed at night knowing that he's got us in the perfect spot where he wants us. And as long as I can be of service to another person, as long as my husband is being of service to his doing his work, then, you know, then we're right where we should be. And we just go to bed at night and we can thank God for that day. So that's where I'm going to end tonight. I really appreciate y'all listening to me and telling my story. And if you want to ask any questions, I'm here. I'm an open book. So thank you.
Thank you so much. That was fantastic. I am going to turn the meeting over to Lisa.
Great. Thank you so much, Tanya. And if anyone wants to write some stuff in the chat, we are going to respect the time here, but she will have access to all of the chat, and y'all can tell her how great she was, because she was. I'm so thankful that we have this new relationship, the Dallas-Houston connection, and I'm sure we'll be friends for a long time. Thank you, Tanya. Just wanted to remind everybody that we are doing virtual donations with Venmo. Margot is our treasurer, so you can send her your cash. And there are some announcements that I kind of jotted down. We do actually, I forgot, we have a group conscience for next week, so we needed to make sure we talk about that. We were hoping to have a, you know, just our usual every few month COVID check-in, see how everybody's doing. I don't think anything's going to change, but, you know, we could talk about it anyway. We probably should go over just a brief financial report, see where we are on that. And then we haven't heard from our fearless GR. I think she's here. She's had some knee issues and has, so I don't know, but we'd love to hear from her if there's anything going on from a district or area standpoint or whatever the news is. We do have our Zoom hosts for next month. I'm going to take 3 weeks, and Amy S. has volunteered to do the Saturday before Thanksgiving. But we do need leads. So, you know, y'all, this is a wee program. So I hope y'all can help us out with leading. We do need a lead for next week. Next week is the easiest week to lead. All you have to do is focus on step 11 in our books. And if you could, if somebody could lead, at least pick up that one in the chat and let me know, that would be great. Step 11:14 is our second week. We do the big book chapter of the month. So that would be chapter 11. So if anyone wants to take that one. And then the last 2 weeks of the month, we just usually leave for topics of your choosing. So please, please, please. So I'm going to close this out here. In this group, we do take a moment to recognize those members who serve this group. Our GR is Cindy. So thank you, Cindy. And our alternate GR and website is me. And our secretary is the beautiful Jamie E. Treasurer is the great Margot B. And our greeter coordinator is Kelly. And we're all here today. I think that's like a first for in a long time that we've all been able to come. So that's awesome. We do have desire chips. And since we are not here physically with one another, we can mail them to you. So if you want a desire chip, you can either private message me, I'm Lisa Kay. We can private message me your address and we will get you a desire chip. Does anyone want to vocalize that they want a desire chip? Just unmute and yell out your name. Okay. In closing, I would like to say that the opinions expressed here were strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you liked and leave the rest. The things you heard were spoken in confidence and should be treated as confidential. Keep them within the walls of this room and the confines of your mind. A few special words to those of you who haven't been with us long. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. If you try to keep an open mind, you will find help. You will come to realize there is no situation too difficult to be bettered and no unhappiness too great to be lessened. We aren't perfect. The welcome we give you may not show the warmth we have in our hearts for you. After a while, you'll discover that though you may not like all of us, you'll love us in a very special way, the same way we already love you. Talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the understanding, love, and peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. And I'm going to ask if Alice would take us out. And anyone else who wants to unmute, it's always, though it sounds like a bunch of mixed up people, which we are. It's always actually helpful to me to hear everybody do the prayer.
Dear God, our Father, who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done.
On earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you for asking me. I'm glad to be here.
So grateful.
Did you say I would lead next?